So, welcome to this seminar. Today, in the first meeting, I will tell you what it is about, and I'll try to motivate you to come and to be active, to listen, to take active participation. As I said, the main criterion for your grade is presence. So, you know, in theory, you could just come here, sit in the last row, and then fall asleep or play with your phone. I definitely advise against that because I'm going to try to make it worth coming to the classes and also listening. I hope you will learn useful things, useful skills that will pay off in the long run in your academic career. That's the idea. So today, just three things. Why this seminar? Why is it in our doctoral program? I will then go through the fundamental skills that you are supposed to learn, especially in this phase when you are still PhD students, when you are still beginning to be a scientist. And then we'll try to outline you the expected benefits of learning these skills and, of course, of attending this seminar. What I will do in the beginning is I'll show you a few movies, just short video clips. And the question that I want to ask you is, what is the common theme in those meetings? What you will see is several recordings. Because we are limited in time, I will just play a little bit of them to give you an idea of what they are and not the whole piece. Here we are, movies. And we'll start with Horowitz. No sound. There is sound. Very good. Somewhere, but I hope you get the idea. We'll continue with other movies. So it was the first one. You can probably find the original somewhere on YouTube. Here's another one, completely different discipline. It's a Taiwanese movie called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. I definitely recommend this movie, but I'm going to play a short video clip from that movie. Sequence. For those of you who love cooking, I love cooking, it's incredible. I suspect these are not the hands of the actor, but it's a pleasure to look at it. Thank you. pleasure to watch it, but as I said, we don't have that much time. We only have 1.5 hours altogether. So, next one. Actually, there are several many clips that you can watch here, but there are some that are really interesting. Just a couple of them. Maybe this. Again, very different discipline. Didn't know how to fall, how to behave, there would be broken bones and blood there. It looks just so easy. Maybe one more thing. That's also a Japanese martial art, kendo.
In 1985, Morichi Mochida was awarded the Tenkan Dan for his unparalleled ability as a kendoist. He continued to practice kendo and to make insightful observations into the very essence of the sport until he collapsed at 89.
It took me 50 years to learn the basics of kendo using my body. After I turned 50, I started the real discipline. I wanted to perform kendo using my mind and spirit. When you reach 60, your lower body weakens. I used my mind to try to reverse the drawbacks. When you're 70, your whole body weakens. That's when I trained my mind to be imperturbable. With a still mind, the mirror inside you reflects the opponent's mind.
Miyamoto considers the Hachidan examination as a means of gauging his progress in training his mind.
That's it. So what is the common theme there? What is it that unites those four clips in completely different disciplines?
They made those things on the master level.
They were definitely masters. Yeah. You cannot deny it. We don't know in the movie the cook, but I assure you. Exactly. It looked like a person who has been cooking for 30, 40 years. In the Japanese martial arts, it's the same thing. Definitely masters. That's one thing that's common. Is there anything else that you notice?
They were using tools.
Well, okay. Yes, although in jiu-jitsu, it was completely empty-handed, right?
There was only the main character in every movie?
Pardon?
There was only one main character
in every movie? Yes, but that may be because I tried to show a master in doing something. So there could be multiple masters, of course, but I wanted to show really somebody who has reached a very high level in what he was doing.
And they were sure about what they were doing. They were done.
Yes, they were very confident. It looked so easy, actually. I told you about this Aikido. It looked so easy. They were attacking him, and he was just, with very slow motion, just getting out of the way, using the energy of the opponent to throw him on the ground. It looked so easy. It is not very easy. By the way, Aikido is very similar, Judo also, to dancing. You know, there's very similar movements, really, like in dance. There are definitely different things, different domains, and there were intellectual domains, but they were also really very physical. What I wanted to show here, the common theme is that they all learned something very, very difficult. It took the Kendo master, did he say 50 years? 50 years. He started probably as a boy, 10 years old maybe, learning how to fight with a sword. Horowitz probably started also as a child. He had teachers who were teaching him. The same with the cook, we don't know really. That's a fiction, of course. In martial arts, kids also start. So it takes many, many years, and they reached perfection. They reached really a mastery level. Your success in general, if you want to be called a master, including science, but everywhere, but that also includes science, which is where you are in, it all depends on the hard work, intelligence, of course, although hard work is more important than intelligence, but also on your skills. And those skills you have to learn. You have to learn how to do research and how to succeed. Most of the time in science, almost always, like in those difficult disciplines, you learn it from a master, from somebody who is giving you a hand, who is guiding you. And that's a very important thing. I suspect in every discipline that I showed you in those short movies, there were masters who were teaching their children. Maybe they have outgrown the masters, they were looking for other teachers, other masters, they were perfecting their skill, but they were learning it from other people. This model of master-apprentice, and this is from Star Wars, remember there was this, what was this guy called? I forgot, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was also a master who was teaching skills to disciples. This was, in every domain that is very hard, it is much easier to learn from other people than to learn from books. You can learn from books, but it's going to take you much more time. There's a Chinese proverb saying that 1 hour with a wise man, because a very sexist society, I would say one hour with a wise person is worth more than 10 years of reading. It's a Chinese proverb, and there is something in it. We learn the most, the fastest, from other people. So that was another thing. And in science, there is also this model of scientific genealogy, which for every scientist, you can actually find out who that scientist's advisor was, who that advisor's advisor was, and you can draw a tree. This is taken from Wikipedia. As an example, there were a group of Dutch topologists, and you see there is a clear clear tree of where they came from, who was their teacher. The same is really in every discipline. Sports people, they had good trainers, they had good coaches. Musicians, the same, good teachers. They had several teachers over their course of learning, but they were all very good. And the next one and the next one were better and better because they have outgrown their teachers probably. Here is physics. Chadwick, the discoverer of neutron, was a student of Rutherford, discoverer of the proton, who was the student of Thomson, who discovered the electron. You see, it's not an accident. They had their skills, their scientific workbench, the methodology, the approach that essentially trained their successors. Very important thing. Look at Horowitz. This is taken from Wikipedia. He was he took piano instructions at an early age. Here are the names of the people: Puchalski, Tarnowski, Blumenfeld. And then he had four students, although I think he was lying about didn't sell. It says somewhere that he had four students, but he was saying only three. He wasn't very proud of the fourth, I guess. You see that clear also tree, the genealogy. So the problem, what's the problem with that model, master and apprentice? It's used everywhere, you know, shoemaking. The master would teach an apprentice how to make shoes, how to do different things. That's how they learned. But what's the problem with it? Now, the problem is that the master, your advisor, your promoter in Polish, your advisor, may have all the skills and try to transfer the skills. But it also, whether you get them also depends on the ability of transferring that knowledge. Not every advisor will tell you everything. They don't tell you everything because there's a long interaction. Maybe you're working with them for 4 years. They may forget something. There may be no situation in which they will tell you about some things. Maybe they are unable to transfer. Some people are very withdrawn. They don't talk a lot. You have to observe them. So it's very difficult. So if the advisor doesn't transfer the knowledge to you, as a doctoral student, you will have no courses to learn those skills. Because these are not hard skills like learning statistics, learning physics, pressure on the materials or something. These are very specific courses, but you will not learn those other skills that are necessary to become a scientist. And sometimes also it happens, not very often, but this is a funny movie meant to be a joke. I'll also show you a little bit of that movie. This is, I think, where is it? I think it's this one. Okay, I hope get an advisor like this. If you do, you should probably leave that relationship. But that happens also, well, not very often. This was really a comedy, a joke, but you can definitely realize that sometimes the interaction between two people may be not ideal the way you want it, because another person has different ideas about things. So every scientist has a tree from which he or she comes. I constructed a page of my advisors. The reason why I did that is I wanted to make you aware, to show you that you don't need to have just one advisor, one mentor. You should actually look around and find many advisors. Anybody who impresses you, and you meet that person at a conference, maybe in the department, maybe at the university, maybe at a different university, is a potential advisor. You can look for wisdom everywhere. So for me, I started with my studies at Warsaw Technical University. That was my mentor. I never finished my master's thesis because I left Poland in 1981, spent a few years in the Netherlands. He was my advisor there. Very interesting fellow, played music and also was known, world known about in the domain of puzzles. He was a mathematician. Actually, by training, he was a chemist. But this was the beginning of computer science, still the first couple of decades. So he was working in a computer science department. By training, he was a chemist and a very versatile person. I believe he's still alive. I don't know for sure. Ad Vandenhoor, my second degree, my second master's thesis in electrical engineering, he unfortunately died a few years ago. I kept in touch with both, actually. I visited them once in a while. When I was in the Netherlands again, I would come and visit them. My doctoral advisor, primary advisor at Carnegie Mellon, United States, I still keep in touch. When I would visit, he moved to California very early on in my studies after the first year. So I had to look around for other people because he was far away from me. I studied, she was the advisor in my department. A wonderful woman, a physicist, gave me a lot of just general advice. I have very good memories of her. Herb Simon, big influence on me, very versatile person, famous in four areas. Computer science also, one of the founders of one of the schools of artificial intelligence. He was well known in the theory of organizations, in psychology, computer science. And economics. He got Nobel Prize in economics, I think, in 77. He was one of the most interesting people I've met, had the pleasure to work with. Chair of the department, also I learned a lot from him. And a member of my PhD committee, a psychologist, Baruch Fischhoff. Then once I graduated, a philosopher, Clark Glimmer, very impressive fellow also. Very good memories of him. Still alive and doing well, I hope. Finally, Adolf Grunbaum, a philosopher also. I will mention him once in a while, maybe, or those people, because I learned different things from many of them. Adolf Grunbaum died 5 or 6 years ago at the age of 95 or 96. So everybody, over the course of their careers, accumulates those impressive people they learned a lot from. And I would definitely like to encourage you to look for such people. Look for them when you meet somebody impressive, listen to them, take their course, talk to them, meet individually. I know of no scientist who will tell you no when you send them an email saying, Dr. X, I attended your lecture and I was very impressed and I wanted to talk about one issue that is close to my dissertation. Would you be willing to meet with me? I've never had an answer saying, no, sorry, I'm not meeting with students or I have no time or something. People in this environment, especially in academia, are very willing to share things with you, to meet with you, to talk, because they are often idealists. They want everybody around them to learn a lot from them. It's one of those environments where you are stealing things from people, stealing knowledge, but they don't mind it. They actually give it to you, and they are very willing to share things with you. So the short message from this slide is, try to also accumulate people like this over the course of your careers. Why this seminar? We taught this seminar at the University of Pittsburgh for around 15 years, I think, and I was teaching it there. Then I left, I moved to Poland in 2019, and a few years ago I had a chat with the chair of the doctoral program here. That was the person before the current chair, and he thought it was a good idea to teach it also here. So that's how the seminar came here. We found that this seminar was very useful to students, because they were essentially learning how science works, what are the important things. They just learned the rules very, very early on, and then they could, of course, enhance that with things that they observed in their career. So in this seminar, we'll start with how does science work? What are the rules of the game here? Then the skills, which I will show you, the skills that I have written down as important. I think they are fundamental. You need to learn all of them in order to be successful. And definitely it will take you time. You will learn more and more. You will perfect your skills. You will maybe add new skills. You will teach others those skills. But it's a good idea to start realizing things that you have to learn. And they will help you anywhere in the world where you are, not just Poland, but wherever you go. I'm willing to argue with anybody who thinks otherwise. Find me a scientist who thinks otherwise. I'll sit down over a cup of coffee or a glass of beer, and I bet that after talking for 5, 10, 15 minutes, we'll agree on those skills. Who knows, maybe they will propose another one. Maybe I will realize, yeah, this is not that important. Important, but not that important. But they are actually quite universal. And they will help you succeeding anywhere where you are. And of course, these skills are not a substitute for good research. Good research, I mean the substance, the thing that you are working on in terms of research, your dissertation. But these are things that are around it and that you also need. I put a joke on my webpage. I don't know if you've noticed, but there is a webpage for this course. I should show it to you quickly. If we go to, I hope there's internet here. So if we go to, here it is. Here's our webpage. So if you find me on my in the Department of Computer Science, in the Faculty of Computer Science, that's my webpage, and then there's a link to teaching. And among the teaching links, there is a link to this seminar. There's a description in Polish and English, but as I said, we'll be teaching this, we'll be talking in English here. So this is the only material about the course, the only thing. This is the planned schedule. Things may change. Sometimes the rector announces that there is a day off or something, so we may change. Sometimes I will not finish a topic, I'll have to finish it the next time. But this is the plan, the rough schedule. And this is an important link, the materials for the seminar. Here is where I will put the... Why is it not working? Okay, here it is. Here are the slides from last year. I will be updating them. Sometimes I make small changes, sometimes bigger changes. So I will update the slides. You will always have the newest version at least a few days after the meeting. But here are the slides from last year. And I will also place the recordings in this directory so that you can always click on MP3, listen to it, download it. In case you missed a meeting and you are interested in the topic, recording together with slides should be okay to see what happened in the class. So I placed a joke there. It was a Polish joke from the communist times. Here is another one that's actually saying the same thing. Sometimes we are so busy, and you probably all think that you are very, very busy. You have no time for other things. But it's exactly what you see here. You know, they are very busy. Somebody wants to offer them, to help them, and they, no, thank you. We don't have the time to learn the new skills. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to encourage you to actually be here actively, listen, because, of course, some of the things you already know. But think about it. If you are here for 1.5 hours, once a week, and you learn one new thing, 1, 2, sometimes 3 new things, and then you will assimilate those things, you will learn them, and you will use them throughout the rest of your career until you retire, and then that 1.5 hour is well spent. Just learn 1, 2, 3 things, and that's going to be a good investment, even if some other parts seem to be, you know them already, yes? There's always things that you don't know. A good friend of mine wrote a book titled Advices for Winners. It's a short, a small book, it's on Amazon, and in that book he tries to convince people that asking for advice is a good idea. I definitely recommend that. The book is very nice, written very easily. Some people make decisions, go through their careers without ever asking advice. They kind of, you know, they think they know it. And he argues that it's a good idea to ask for advice, always. And one of the examples, a key example that he gives is the following. Suppose I know 1,000 things, and this person here only knows 100 things. I could say, well, I know so much more than he or she. Probably among the 100 things that this person knows, there are 2 things that I don't know. 2, 3, 4, 5 things that I don't know. So talking to other people, listening, is a good idea because you will fish out things that you didn't know. You will fish them out, learn, verify that this is indeed true, and then you will accommodate them. So what are the skills that every one of you, future, well, current scientists, but you are still apprentices, you are still learning, what are the skills that you need to know? Here's a list of skills that I came up with years ago, and it's not like, you know, 10 most important skills or 7. People have those numbers, you know, that they like. 3 most important things, 5, 7, 10. I have 18, and I've had that for a few years, definitely. Why 18? Well, you know, why 17? I just came up with them. I'll go through them one by one, but I wanted to show you a movie from a comedy made by Mel Brooks in 1980s, I think.
Moses went to the mountain, and God spoke unto him.
Moses, this is the Lord thy God commanding you to obey my law. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. A deaf man could hear you.
What?
Nothing, I punished it, forget it. Oh Lord, why have you chosen me? What would you have me do for you?
I shall give you my laws, and you shall take them unto the people.
Yes, Lord!
Joke about this tendency of people to have those round numbers and kind of trying to justify why is it 18 and not 10, right? They're 18 and they're 18. The round numbers are nice, but sometimes things are not round. So the light colored are things that we are going to talk about, but on the side. But the darker are the subjects of our meetings. Sometimes there will be two during one meeting. In any case, I believe we will be able to manage with all of these things during our meetings. If nothing unforeseen happens, like a cancellation of a class by the university, or I don't get sick too often, but in case I get sick or something happens to me, they also happen. Okay, so what we'll do now is we will go through this, and I will kind of tell you roughly what it is about, so that you are prepared for what we are going to talk about. How does science work? That's kind of one and two, as you see. How does science work? What is research? We need to know the rules of the game. We need to learn the rules. Otherwise, how can we do something that we don't understand? You can kind of go and change the rules, like in the comedy, the Japanese comedy. You know, he was changing the rules, quoting some Bushido points, which he probably made up during the training. Doing something without knowing the rules is really funny. When I was a child, I remember it was like high school. We were playing a game that we called in Polish "żużel dookoła," which is like, what is "żużel"? I don't know even in English. We just invented a funny name, and we were playing cards, the three of us. And people would come in a camp, in a summer camp, and said, "Well, what are you playing?" "We are playing this żużel dookoła game." "And can I play also?" "Yeah, sure, just sit down and play." And we were playing it, inventing the rules, like, you know, the king. Okay, a king takes it. But in the next round, no, but king of spades cannot take it, right? We were inventing the rules as we went, trying to make fun of the people who joined us. And people were joining and actually seriously trying to learn the rules and playing. And we changed the rules as we went. It was just funny. It was an age when I was, when it was funny to kind of fool somebody else. So rules, that's our next meeting next week. How does science work? What are the basic mechanisms in science? The next meeting, it's going to be a whole meeting, is focusing on identifying good research problems. At this stage, in your first, second year of your doctoral studies, and maybe even further, you are in a good position because your advisor will suggest you some problems. You have chosen the area that was required when you joined the doctoral studies, but the precise topic of your dissertation, that's something that will kind of come out of that in collaboration with your advisor. And usually the advisor plays an important role in suggesting you something. But the moment you become independent, you finish your doctorate, people will expect from you to come up with problems. We need to be able to find problems. I was very lucky, and a large part of that lecture I am basing on the things I learned from Herb Simon. He used to give a lecture in the beginning, the first month of the academic year, to first year students. Doctoral students in the computer science department about finding research topics. I loved it so much the first time I went that I listened to that lecture probably three or four times. Every year I would follow the bulletin board and I would go to that lecture. So I'm going to share that with you. Writing papers. Of course, there are courses on writing. Do you have a course on writing in the program? No? Well, you have English, maybe you're practicing things there. Today, the academic landscape is changing because people are more and more using what is called, not completely correctly, artificial intelligence. That's large language models, deep neural networks that are generating text. They are amazingly good. As a teacher, I'm teaching a course on in my area, decision support, Bayesian networks. I gave once the assignments that I planned to give to students to ChatGPT, and what I got out was highest grade. I would give 5 to that. Okay, and there were some of them required counting, calculating things. They are very, very good. You can use that in writing. The problem is, I think, that you need to learn to do it yourself. You should use that tool. It's a very good tool. By the way, that ended so that all my exams now are in a bathing suit in the middle of the room. Nothing, no phone, no smartwatch, glasses or anything, because you know, students find ways of using those tools in exams. So they want, I want students to learn things that they should learn. Not everything, but things that they should learn. So design reasonable exams, but they have to do it on their own. As scientists, of course, you can use good tools, and they are wonderful in the sense of being very good tutors that you can have anytime you are at home. You can just ask questions, they will tell you, they will explain you. Keep in mind that they make mistakes, that they confabulate, they can invent things. But as a scientist, you should definitely never lose the ability to think. To think how to find a topic, to design the structure of your paper, to know how to write it. And that class, that meeting, may be a little bit old-fashioned in today's age, but there are definitely things that you should learn and you should know just in case the electricity falls out and the internet and you cannot use those tools. Those tools can help you with translating, with explaining something. And I've never used them in writing papers, but maybe because I'm old-fashioned, I'm writing them myself. But you should learn certain things about writing so that you can do it yourself. Think about the long term. If people were using ChatGPT and other large language models for writing, why on earth would you even bother reading? What would be the reason for you to read that? Is there any reason? Come on. You can just ask ChatGPT to tell you instead of reading it. So it's a one-way street. It's not a street that you can pass further. There's a blockage somewhere there. At some point, people will definitely retreat from that. They are great tools, but they have to be used definitely in moderation. So a good class on writing, on the structure of the paper, on how you write it, it's something that is still useful and is going to be useful. Presenting is very important. It's one way of sharing your results, of advertising your work. And I suspect you have a class on course on presentation. You have something of that? If not, then you will have probably something.
So
you can choose it. It's a elective. You can choose that. Definitely, if you, I'm going to give you 1 hour. I mean, 1.5 hour kind of summary of what presenting is about. What are the important things there? Hopefully, not in a too boring way. And if you decide that you need to know more, you can always go and take a class. If you don't have the time, I suspect that 1.5 hours plus being active, thinking, going to talks, observing and learning by observation is probably also going to be sufficient, going to work for you. You should present as often as you can. Whenever they are asking for volunteers, you should say, yes, I'm going to present. Because practice makes a master. You will learn best by presenting, and of course preparing for the presentation and designing your presentation. So absolutely you should present a lot, and you should present well if you present. We are not going to talk about that. I used to teach this course 3 hours, 15 weeks normally. In this doctoral school there is just 10 meetings of 2 hours. So we have definitely, we have to squeeze things out. In Pittsburgh, we used to watch some movies together because there was time, lectures together, and then talk about them. In this course, I will send you a link to the lecture. There are going to be a few things that I will ask you to watch, one for next week already. not too many, just a few, and you have to do it on your own, just because there's no time here. There's no time for this skill, but it's very important. The moment you become an employee somewhere, a faculty with your doctorate, you will need to find funds for your research. Very important. It's amazing what you can do with money. For example, you can hire a programmer. You can hire somebody who helps you in your lab. You can hire doctoral students. In your case, it's a very specific situation, very interesting, very easy, actually. All of you are getting stipend from the government. The government is paying that. In many universities in US, there are a few slots that the university will provide, they will pay, but otherwise individual faculty has to have to find money. So if you don't have the money, you don't have doctoral students. You don't have doctoral students, they don't support your research, and you are less productive. So it's very important to be able to get money, and you need to learn how to obtain grants. There are sources of money. Typically, in a country in Europe, it's the government who is sponsoring research. In US, it's not on the government. There is, military is a part of the government. There are military grants, but there are also industrial grants. There are foundations who offer money for research. So you need to, and you need to learn how to get that money. It's competitive. Money is a scarce resource everywhere. So it's competitive. Everybody would like it. Few will get that money. Reviewing, refereeing the work of others, we are not going to talk much about this. I'm going to mention that in the context of writing, but not as a separate class. The moment you start publishing, the moment you publish your first, second paper, there will be requests to you by email saying, would you please review this paper? And you need to participate in that process because that's one of the fundamental mechanisms in science. So you need to learn how to do it well. And that class was about reviewing. Again, we are not going to devote a whole class to this. I'm going to mention a few things in the context of writing. But this is, if you ask any of your advisors, you will notice that they recognize those 18 skills because they are doing that probably daily in their work. Teaching, if nothing unusual happens, we are going to have a class on teaching. Some of you are teaching. It's a requirement in the doctoral program that you are supposed to teach 50 or 60 hours every year, I think. So hopefully there will be some useful advice here. The problem typically for a scientist is that you need to combine this with your research. Teaching usually takes you away from research. And that's the main problem. So how do you organize your teaching so that it's not putting too much burden on you? And how do you do it well? And it's also important because the moment you start looking for jobs, you will be supposed to know how to teach. And you need to know how to show that you are potentially a very good teacher. This is going to be a whole meeting, guiding students, running a lab, managing projects. You are now, I'm saying it jokingly, you are at the lowest level of the academic ladder, right? You are working on a doctorate, you are kind of in the food chain, you are on the lowest. That will, of course, change. The moment you get your doctorate, you will start guiding your master's students, Bachelor of Science students, in their thesis. You will have people working for you. Once you get in a country like Poland, there is this habilitation. They call it sometimes in English Doctor of Science. You are all going to get Doctor of Philosophy. That's the correct translation of your doctorate. Doctor of Science is the next thing. In some countries, it's there. I think in England, there's also Doctorate of Science that's similar to our habilitation. The moment you get that, you will have doctoral students. You can advise them. So you will be running very quickly a lab. You will have a few people to guide. Nobody teaches us that. How to be a good boss? How to be a good leader? So that meeting is devoted to that. How, you know, some advice how to do it, and you will learn it by observing other people. Hopefully, your advisor is a good manager also. You can look at the tricks that your advisor, he or she is using. But if he or she is not a very good mentor and boss, you have to learn it by observing others. So here I'm going to be just pointing out something, some tricks that a good boss, a good leader should have, and the rest you will have to learn as you go. Creativity is very important because, of course, hard work is very, very important. Some intelligence is important, but I'm willing to make a bet that all of you have more than needed, than necessary intelligence. So that's not something that distinguishes you. All of you are intelligent. Hardworking may distinguish you. There may be some of you who work less, some of you who work more. But anybody who wants to be successful has to work hard. It's just not, there's no way around it. You have to work hard. Everybody who wants to be successful has to work hard. So what distinguishes those people who work hard, who are smart? I guess creativity, good ideas. And it turns out that we are not born being creative. Some people think, I was born not creative, or, wow, this person is so creative, and I'm not. It turns out, and there is a lot of research in psychology on creativity, because it's such an important topic, that that creativity is something that you can develop in yourself. There are some tricks that can make you more creative. And I'm going to focus on those tricks in this lecture. You're not going to become more creative after one class, but if you adopt some of those tricks, in the long run, I bet you're going to become more creative. Information finding, no special meeting on that. It used to be called library work. You went to the library to find papers with information that you needed. Today, it's so easy. You just go to Google Scholar, type what you want, and within an hour, 2 hours, you find everything that you need in electronic version. If needed, you need to ask the authors to send you a copy, or sometimes with older papers, you need to go to the library. But it's so much easier now. I assume that all of you know how to do it. If not, we can talk about this. If you have any questions, we can always get into that. That has changed a lot in the last, I would think, 40 years. When I was a doctoral student, we were still using, library was the primary place for papers. And what was very useful is indexes, looking back into the past and looking into the future. Into the past is easy, right? You find a paper and there are references there, literature. Then you can look into the past. How did you look into the future? There were special indexes published, printed, that indexed papers in different disciplines. So if you had a paper, you could look up who referred to that paper, who cited that paper in a printed book. Today it's so easy. You can essentially look at the citations, you can look at who cited that paper. So nice, so easy. As I said, we are not going to talk about this. This is a skill that you probably already have, and not worth a meeting. Career planning is something that we are going to talk about quite early on. It's by career I mean from now on until you retire, let's say. So how do you plan it? Where do you want to be in 10, 20, 30 years from now? If you don't know, if you don't plan, if you don't have any idea where you want to be, then the sad thing is that every destination will seem to be a success. That's in a way sad. Of course, it's good to be satisfied with what you have, of course. That's a certain attitude. But you can influence and you can dream and you can plan how to achieve those dreams. The dreams don't have to be very specific. It's not like, you know, I'm going to go to get Nobel Prize in 2037. That's very concrete and not very likely that you will, that you are going to achieve precisely that. But there can be vague dreams, like I want to work in university environment and in the long run, in 10, 15 years, I want to be a professor. That's a vague enough dream that that you can have. Or I want to be very wealthy, another dream, right? And many people have those kind of, you know, goals, plans, but they don't do enough in how to find the intermediate steps. What do I do next? I want to be wealthy. What do I do next, right? So we are going to talk about career planning, and there's going to be a also an assigned lecture. I'll ask you to watch it, of a very good, very successful scientist who talks about his career and gives a lot of good advice. In fact, I was stunned how honest he was about his advice. Some advice you may find, wow, do I do that? But he was very honest. It was a lecture at the University of Pittsburgh. Once he came, they recorded that lecture. Then I asked for a recording, not a very high quality recording, but the topic is very good, and I have summarized the main points of that career planning lecture. And I have some advice on my own also. Interacting with other people and networking. No special meeting on that, but it's a very important skill. It's a skill that you will be using throughout your career, and you should use it. Some people are withdrawn, like, you know, you go to a conference and you kind of, you know, sit separately, eat your lunch and look at people, that's it. Other people are very active. They come, we are in a coffee line at a conference, and I say, hi, I'm Marek, I work at the Białystok University of Technology, where are you from? Right, and then she says something about where she is and her work. You know, I if she is interested, I will tell about my work. If there is any agreement, and there should be because it's a conference on a certain topic, yes, then we kind of start talking. I learn more about her work. She learns about mine. Then we may, in fact, exchange emails. Then I go, where are you from?
Turkey.
Which university?
Turkey. Or,
oh, yes.
I'm from Turkey, Izmir Institute of Technology.
Izmir. Yeah, suppose I get I go on a vacation or a conference to Izmir. What do? I send her an email saying, oh, I'm going to be in Izmir next month. How does she respond? So nice to see you again. Would you like to come and give a talk in my department? That's the correct response from her. What is my response? I'll be delighted to. Why? Because it's an opportunity to talk. It's an opportunity to sell my work, to make people aware of my work, right? For them, it's an opportunity to just to get somebody, you know, doing something different, a fresh view on things. That's also useful, right? And for me, it's an opportunity to talk, to advertise my work. So wherever you are, you should, from now on, you don't wait, you do it now. You should meet as many people as possible. You should learn what they are doing, how they are doing, where they are from. You should, in fact, meet as many of your colleagues here as possible. Of course, you are in different fields. That's a little bit of a problem. But sometimes research can be interdisciplinary. So you can have ideas that are influenced by another field. Or you can get ideas to do some work in that field. A few years ago, that was, 2016, 17, there was a reform of the higher education, of the university education. And, you know, like every reform, it probably had good and bad things. Again, I don't want to make a judgment about the whole thing, even though it's tempting to say, oh, this government was bad, this government was good. I'm not that simple, okay? Everybody is doing something probably good, making also mistakes. In that reform, there was one thing that was terrible. What they did is they placed boundaries between disciplines. You may feel the effect of that even now. So they tell you, if you are a mechanical engineer, you have to publish in mechanical engineering journals. That's it. If you publish outside of that, you don't get points. And that's a terrible thing. Why is it terrible? Because fields and boundaries are created by humans to start with. If something like that happened 50, 60 years ago, there would be no computer science. It didn't exist. I told you one of my mentors was a chemical engineer who started working in computer science. He would not do it because he would not get any points for that. People would tell him, no, don't do that, you are a chemist. No, he was interested in something and went to that field. The most fertile areas for research ideas are precisely at the intersection of different fields. So don't be afraid of meeting people in different fields, talking to them. It doesn't hurt you to talk, to have a nice chat, queuing for coffee. If there is nothing in common, you say, well, it was very nice to talk to you. I have to run to my lecture room, right? That nothing bad happened, right? We just had a chat. If, on the other hand, you find something in common, something interesting, you may have a potential collaborator on a paper, because you start talking and, you know, she talks me about her work and I say, well, wait a minute, but have you heard of this and that? I'm doing very similar, we talked and we may have an idea for a paper. Suppose that Izmir University is looking for faculty and I'm on the market, I need to get a job. There is an advertisement placed on the web and maybe in some professional journals. And I want to apply there. What do I do? I'm sending her an email saying, hey, I noticed that you are looking for a new faculty. Can you tell me more? Can you tell me who are you really looking for, right? If she's on the faculty there, she will know that they are looking for an artificial intelligence person, a database person. Some of it is in the description, but the fine details are not going to be there. So things like that. That's the network. That's how you essentially, it makes it so much easier for you to move around in the world of science. Of course, you can think about it in the negative sense as, you know, getting buddies everywhere and doing things that are not legal. No, I'm not talking about this. There's nothing illegal in asking. If she cannot say, she will tell me, sorry, I'm not allowed by the rules of my department to share these things with you or something. She can tell that, and it's okay. But if she will know, she will tell me. And where else? Okay, she's organizing a conference on the topic. And she's composing a program committee. Not easy to ask somebody, would you please join my program committee, because you are busy, right? She will send me an email, for example, because we met. Would you like to join that program committee? No, I'm also busy, but it looks interesting, right? We talked about it and we are in a similar field. Say, sure, yes. I will need a reviewer, and I know that the paper is precisely in her field. I will know who to send to the paper. What else? Looking for jobs, reviewing. Again, nothing illegal about this. Think about it. How many times friends told you about things? You just get a lot of potentially good sources of information. So the advice, we are not going to have any whole meeting on this, just it will show up here and there. The advice for you is build that network as early as possible, as many people as possible. But, you know, it's not that like, you know, I will ask every one of you what your name is, write down the emails, that's it. No, I mean, when you are queuing up for coffee, have a good conversation, right? The meetings have to be authentic. Otherwise, people will think of you, well, what does this guy want, right? So, in any case, create a network, but network of... I can't say friends, but colleagues, good colleagues. We don't have anything on that, not a meeting, but this is another thing that you will be facing once you get your doctorate. looking for a job. And looking for an academic job has really different things in it than looking for a job when you are going to the industry. There's a whole, actually, procedure that works here. There is a curriculum vitae that is longer than just a resume of one or two pages. There is a statement of research interest that they expect from you. Sometimes they teach. They ask you for a statement of teaching interests, cover letter. It is always, and then if they invite you, they invite you for a whole day, maybe for 2 days. You come. They want you to give a lecture. They are listening to the lecture very carefully to make a judgment. Are you going to be a good colleague? Are you going to be a good teacher? That's why giving talks is so important. The practicing talking is very important. And that will, especially when when there are many candidates, it's difficult. And it comes and goes in waves. When I was looking for a job after getting my PhD, the national average in US was 150 applicants for one position. Can you imagine? And I was very handicapped because I had to get a job in Pittsburgh because of my family. So I had to get that job. There was no other possibility. And I got it. There were actually two openings in Pittsburgh. One I didn't fit very well. They didn't invite me. But the other one, they invited me. I was one of... There were two openings there at the university. I think they had like 10 candidates come, visit for the whole day and give a talk. They take you to dinner, they take you to lunch, they observe you, you meet with different people. So there are certain things that are very useful. I wonder if I don't think that we are going to talk about this, but I may be wrong here. There's going to be one class on something very important in practice, very important in that scientists work very hard. You may have noticed that they have the freedom to do what they want with their time. You don't have to come in the morning at 7 o'clock and stamp your card and then at 3 p.m. stamp it again that you are exiting. You can work at home, you can work in a coffee shop, you can come to the university just a few days a week. I come to the university this semester 3 times a week at most. Some weeks there will be that I will come 2 times a week. Usually most of the day I'm teaching. I work at home a lot. Sometimes when I'm tired, what I do is I just spend the whole day doing one of my hobbies, which is fishing. I just take my canoe on the roof of my car, go somewhere and fish for the whole day, from the morning to the evening. And I come back, my batteries are loaded. We can do that as scientists to essentially prevent getting, mentally unstable. We need to kind of keep the balance. And that's very nice. We work hard, but we can do things like this. We can even go away for a few days. When I go to a conference, I usually attach a few days to the conference, just, to drive around, to see the place. I've seen a lot of places in the world just going to conferences. So things like that, tricks like that. And another thing that so you balance your life between work and the important things, really important things. If you think that scientists are resistant to bad things happening in the society, like divorces, then you are wrong. I know many scientists whose families fell apart. Very often they blame they are working too hard. I don't believe that. I think it takes certain patience on the hand of your spouse to actually accept that you are working very hard and you need that. So, but anyway, bad things are also happening in scientists' families. So again, what do we do? What kind of things can we do to prevent that from happening? Again, I'm not a know-it-all, so I can just tell you the tricks that I learned that work. They may work for some of you. It's nice actually to see how somebody is managing with that and give you some advice on that. That goes together with coping with stress. Stress, deadlines, no money, no grant, you have no money to go to a conference, to buy a computer, paper rejected, grant application rejected, you didn't get the promotion, whatever. There is a lot of stress. The students are complaining, they don't like your teaching, whatever. You know. Somebody denounced you to the dean or to the rector that that you said something inappropriate in a lecture, whatever can happen. There are many sources of stress. So how do you cope with that? Other sources of stress? Well, somebody stole your idea. Happens also. Yes. You worked on it for 2 years and then somebody stole it and published. Stress. So how do you deal with that? That's going to be one class, 15 and 16. Ethics, the last class meeting in Poland and in some countries, not in US. I don't recall giving an oath when I got my doctorate, like swearing that I will behave ethically for the rest of my life, I will be pursuing knowledge without self-interest, etc. In Poland, when you finish your doctorate, there's going to be an oath that you make when you get your doctoral degree, which looks really very very nice, beautiful. I think, don't I have it? I think I have it here also. No, but there's an oath anyway, which is very old. It's dating back, I think, to Middle Ages, to the oldest universities in Poland, which were some of the first universities in this part of Europe. So we have an old tradition, and this oath is also there. But I'm going to talk about more broadly. So hopefully it's not going to be a boring lecture, because I'm going to tell you more about these ideas of ethical behavior, but also the expectation from us. There is a big expectation from us, from you, from me too, doctor, professor, we cannot pick our noses. If somebody notices that, wow, you know, that's bad, right? The higher we are in the society, the bigger expectation from us. I live in a village. There was a problem in the village of because they were building an overpass over the railroad, and people were unhappy with this, with that thing. I took it in my own hands, I formed a committee and helped the village to actually defend itself against the local governments and the Polish railroads. Why me? Well, somebody has to do it, and I cannot kind of put that task on somebody who is not very well educated or, you know, I know how to do things. Expectation. You are the salt of this society, essentially. People will be looking at you with your doctorate. That's an obligation, not just a privilege that you have a doctorate and here you are, professor, doctor, schabilitowany, etc., etc. There is coming with it, there are big obligations. And that's one of the ideas there. Quality rather than quantity, and that's the last one, the last point. We are not going to spend a meeting on that. It's not something that that we can talk about for long. But sometimes people think that because of the points that you get, you need to publish a paper by the end of your second year, I think, here. Okay, so I'm going to just write something, you know, and publish it in some week conference. Generally, it's not a very good idea. There are certain rules, kind of unwritten rules for scientists. You can publish in a dubious quality journal or a conference, but you can't do it too often. If people look at your resume, at your curriculum vitae, and notice too many papers published in those gray zone journals or conferences, that's not going to look good for you. Quality is usually, people expect from you small number of high quality contributions. That's, I learned it from Baruch Fischhoff, one of my committee members. He said that. When I thought about it, I absolutely agreed with him. Small number of high quality contributions. Even if you publish in your lifetime three papers, but they are absolutely breakthrough, people will know how to spell your name correctly. If you publish 300 dubious quality papers in gray zone journals and conferences, nobody will know who you are. Or when they see your name, oh yeah, that's one of those people that publish in those places. So an important idea, not a meeting, but just an important idea that you should also kind of assimilate. Small number of high quality contributions. Is there anything else? Maybe there is anything else. I have, occasionally I look at least again and I wonder if there is anything else, but I haven't come up with anything. If you think of anything, do let me know so that I can think about it and we can talk about this and extend the list. I'm not bound by 10, 20 or 25, can be any number. Concluding remarks, we still have 10 minutes. In the class materials, I showed you where you can find the recordings. And there will be also the slides, but also I will send you links to videos that I want you to watch. If there are any readings, I'll let you know. If you're interested in any of the topics, there is actually quite a lot written about it. Kind of general purpose publications for future scientists. How do you do things? There are even books on that. I think I have one or two books in my office on the topic of being a scientist. You probably have already the following things. You are smart, you are hardworking. If you are not smart and hardworking, you wouldn't be here, because you took part in some kind of competition, you got the place to in the doctoral program, and because you are that far already, you have developed your own quite likely successful ways of dealing with the complexity of being a student, a scientist. So you have already your own ways. There's no doubt about this. What I want you to get out of this seminar, again, just being here is enough to get a passing grade. But being active, as I said, if you learn one, two, or three things in a meeting, is going to be well spent time. So generally, as much as you put into it, so as much as you think about it, consider it, that is going to determine how much you get out of this. Think seriously about your career. That's one thing. Maybe career of a scientist is not for you. There's nothing wrong with any type of career. You need to pick something that really is for you, that you really are happy in, satisfied. And it's a very serious question. What do I want to do? So I think after this seminar you will know what life of a scientist looks like in combination with what you are doing already with your advisor. I hope that you will organize your knowledge of the important skills. There's this list of 18 things. Once in a while you may feel bored because you will have heard about something, you will have known about something. But as I said, one idea that you assimilate will be well spent time. At the University of Pittsburgh, we had good experiences with that. With this course, we kept it in the full size, and both the students and the faculty were happy, that the advisors were happy with the skills that the students knew about and learned. Because it's organization of those skills, you will be able now to notice things that are happening in the interaction between you and your advisor. You will notice that the advisor is reviewing or asking you to review something, that the advisor is writing a grant proposal. You will know what he or she is talking about. This is an important slide that I found a few years ago that I show in many contexts. This is actually a slide about investing. They show with certain assumptions, you invest $5,000 a year for 10 years. So this year 5,000, next year 5,000, etc., for just 10 years. And then you stop doing this. Now, and you start doing this at different age. If you start doing it at 25, then you invest between 25 and 35, and then you spend the rest of your life just having fun. You don't invest anymore. You may start doing it at 35 or 45. And this is an exponential curve. So you invest your money, and then the money, the interest, you reinvest. You know the idea, right? So the formula is simple. It assumes 8% a year growth. That's not unreasonable, depending on what you invest in. And you see that the effect of that when you reach your retirement age at 60 or 65. Look at the drastic difference in how much you have. If you start early, then this process takes is going on for a longer time, that reinvestment and growth. And you have so much, you have 10 times more money than when you invest at 55, so 30 years later. Why this picture? The idea is that you should invest as early as possible. Investment can be financial, like in this picture, and that's okay. But investing in any kind of skill, any type, kind of knowledge is governed by the same rules. Because if you learn something, you will have benefits of that skill early on. And those benefits will multiply and multiply and multiply. So the earlier you learn something, the better. There's a saying in Polish, a proverb, czego ja się nie nauczy, tego Jan nie będzie umiał. What Johnny doesn't learn, John will not know, right? That's a similar idea. So the earlier you learn something, the better. I will try to give you all that I know and that I believe is worth passing. University is a very, I mentioned it already today, a very interesting environment. People are stealing knowledge from one another, and the people who are stolen from, they don't mind it. They actually are happy. I will be delighted if you take over whatever you find valuable in me, in my knowledge. That will be, I will be proud, actually, of myself and of you also. So I will be the first one to come. Well, I have the key. I cannot go around it. But I will be the last one to leave. And if you have any questions and you want to talk, then I'll be happy to stay. Actually, that's not true, because today I'm teaching on Wednesdays at 5:40. So I only have 10 minutes to leave this room, get the key, and run to another room. So that's not true. I will still leave the last one, but then we should meet outside of the class. So we should schedule a meeting and then meet. I'll make myself available to you whenever you want. I expect you to come to the meetings, to be active, ask, add things, disagree. Help me to improve the seminar for the sake of your younger colleagues for the next years. Pass whatever you learn here to your younger colleagues. Tell them about this if they, hopefully it will be useful. Maybe you are going to be in the position where you have younger people, you are a mentor of other people. Relate the content of this class to your professional career. Whatever we are talking about in this seminar is actually very practical. You should be able to see how this relates to your work, to your activity. And finally, succeed and make our university famous. That's an important thing. If Politechnica is famous, I'm going to be very happy, because wherever I go, people will say, oh, that guy comes from Białystok University of Technology. Wow, right? So it's in my interest that you all succeed. Yes? That's it, and the time is, well, we have 3 minutes. Any questions? You may have not signed. Whoever hasn't signed the presences, you can do it on exiting. Any questions? Anything you would like to? I'll communicate with you by email. So you expect an email from me today or tomorrow. I'll send you a link to a video that I want you to watch, and for next week. It's just an hour long video. And next week we are going to talk about how science works. Thank you very much.